and welcome to the Rick House. Hello, folks. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and I am your host. You are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. And, folks, happy March Madness. For those of you who care, the NCAA tournament for men and women starts tonight in one form or another. So, congratulations to getting to March Madness. Folks, we have a lot to get into tonight, and I actually want to give you a little rundown about what we're going to be discussing. First and foremost, we're going to be talking about this fascinating topic that I thought was really, really worth getting into. What do you consider the most exciting play in sports? I have my thoughts. Can't wait to hear yours. I will give you all sorts of options. I'll explain that as we go along. And with this past weekend's Players Championship winner, the question obviously becomes, can Rory McIlroy win the Masters this year? Finally. I have some thoughts on that. We'll talk about where he is in his golf game right now, currently, along with all the heartbreaks he's experienced since winning his last major. And also, everyone's favorite segment, what are you drinking tonight? So, folks, it is a jam-packed show. But first, I want to get a couple things off my chest, and I want to talk to you about them in person. Let's get started. Let's get the elephant in the room out of the way. We are in day 12 of the Wolf Watch. Yes, my wife has yet to open the Wolf Gourmet convection countertop oven that I bought her for her birthday that we couldn't return because she thought it was too big. Folks, again, this is day 12. Now, in fairness to my wife, we have been busy. There has been a lot to do around here, both professionally and personally. So some of this is not due to her reluctance to open gifts in a timely fashion. But probably, let's say 32% is due to the schedule. I think the other 68%, you know, she just takes her time opening gifts for whatever reason. It's fine. I don't take this personally. But this is day 12 of the Wolf Watch, and I have decided to set a date. I'm going to give you an over-under date of when my wife is going to open the Wolf Gourmet Convection Countertop Oven. Again, if you listened to the show last week, you know this is a gift I gave my wife. It's basically a very fancy toaster oven. The date is Memorial Day, which is at the end of May. I am going to take the over. I think she's going to open it after Memorial Day. If I'm wrong, I will record an emergency video for you guys available on the socials to let you know when the Wolf Watch has ended. But for now, we are in day 12 with no end insight. Thank goodness we have a regular oven and a regular kitchen. All right, so I'll keep you posted. That's the story there. And I also wanted to get into another topic. Now, as many of you know, I play golf. And I like to play golf with a number of different parties and constituencies. I play with friends. Occasionally, I'll play with family. From time to time, I'll play with neighbors. But one of the people that I like to play golf with quite a bit is a buddy of mine who lives down I-95. He is in the D.C. area. My man, Skip. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about Skip because I've been trying to get the golf season started with him for a couple weeks now, and he is MIA, missing in action. Skip and I have been playing golf for about 20 years. Sometimes we play 6 times a summer. Sometimes we play 3 times a summer. Sometimes we'll play, 12 times. It just depends on the year. Skip, for years, has been a very good golfer. As most of you know by now, I am a self-professed lousy golfer. So I have been at a disadvantage. But because I am game for pretty much anything, Skip and I have been playing for a monetary nominal amount every time we play golf. And that amount is $6. We pay $2 for whoever wins the front nine, $2 whoever wins the back nine, and $2 for the overall 18 cumulative. I got to tell you, for years, I lost money to Skip. I mean, years. Because we would set the number of strokes that he would have to give me that was going to be based off the first round of golf that we played every year. Whether it was a tough course or an easy course, whether I was playing well or playing poorly, whether he was playing well or he was playing poorly, it was going to be early in the golf season, and whatever the final results of that first round between he and I were, that was going to be the number, however much he beat me by. That was going to be the number of strokes that he would have to give me per side and cumulatively. Now, I don't know if any of you know anything about golf handicaps, but basing the number of what you're supposed to get from an opponent based off of your execution of a single round of golf is really not the way to set a number. You really should be using your handicap. For years, I didn't have a handicap because I don't belong to a country club that focused on golf. And up until recently, you couldn't get a handicap if you didn't belong to a country club. But within the last 3 or 4 years, we've started setting the number based off of our official handicaps. I use the USGA Gen app, just like he does. And I got to tell you, folks, prior to using the official handicaps, I was playing with both arms behind my back. Jake, oh my gosh. This guy, Skip, he beat me all the time in golf. But as soon as we switched to official handicaps, I started beating Skip like a drum. I mean, yeah, my nickname on the golf course was Max Roach. I beat that kid so much. I almost never lose against Skip when we're playing golf nowadays. Last 3-4 years. I mean, I think I can't give you the numbers, but I'm probably something like 16-2. Something like that over the last 3 or 4 years. Now, granted, Skip has to give me a lot of strokes because, again, I'm a lousy golfer. But he doesn't give me any more strokes than I have earned because of my handicap versus his handicap. So for years, he took my money with zero compulsions. I mean, he was happy to watch me struggle and fail and not succeed on the golf course, and he happily took my $6. Well, now that the shoe's on the other foot, Skip's a little harder to find. I mean, I got to tell you, folks, I keep trying to contact this kid. I'm like, Skip, let's get out. Let's play a little golf. Yeah. Let's do that. I'm unavailable this weekend. Or I can do it. I can play at 2:15 on a Thursday. Are you available? No, Skip, I'm not available at 2:15 on a Thursday when you tell me that Wednesday night. So Skip has been dodging me. I mean, it is very, very, very apparent. But folks, I got to tell you, I am looking forward to getting our golf season started with Skip because I'm trying to buy a new driver by the end of the summer. And I think $6 per round is going to come in very, very handy towards the purchase of that new driver. Now, Skip, I know that you're watching. Just so you folks know who are not Skip, just so you know, Skip is actually a very consistent golfer. He shoots in the mid-90s, basically. I don't know. He's probably about 215 off the tee, something like that. Probably hits his 5-iron about 160 yards, you know. But he can get around the golf course. Why? Because he is a fantastic putter, and he's very good around the greens, in and out of bunkers, and chipping. He's very, very good. The only problem is he likes to play shorter distances. Skip is a big fan of playing blended tees. Now, what is a blended tee? Okay, I'll tell you. A blended tee is when you look at a golf card and they will give you a designation for switching back and forth between the whites and the blues, for example, on certain holes so that you're playing less yardage than the blue tees, but more yardage than the white tees. This is just an example. Some golf courses have 4 or 5 sets of different tees, right? So a blended is playing more than one tee during the course of a round. And Skip is a very big fan of playing blended tee golf. I am not a fan of playing blended tee golf. I think I've only played blended tees once, and that was with Skip. And I've decided never to do it again. I'm like, let's either play the blue tees or the white tees. I don't care which, but I'm not going back and forth. And by the way, I decide usually for my game which tees to play by two factors. The slope of the golf course. The slope is a number. It goes anywhere from, I think, like 195 all the way up to like 145, 157 for the hardest of hard golf courses. The slope number is an indicator of how difficult the golf course is. The other factor that I use in deciding which tees to play is the distance of the par threes. I don't need a par three. I'm not playing from tees where I have more than one par tee that's over 175 yards. I can play a 193-yard par three. I can play a 205-yard par three, but all the other par threes on the course, whether they're 3, 4, however many, I want them to be 175 yards or less. And that's how I decide which tee to play. And for me, that's usually the whites. So that being said, I think I told you, Skip likes to play blended tees quite a bit, but he also likes to play very short yardage. I think Skip's comfort zone is right around 5,500 yards. I prefer to play around 6,500 yards. But, you know, tomato, tomato, that's fine. I do remember one time last year, Skip suggested that we play from the ladies' tees, the red tees. I think it was like 4,750 yards. I said, Skip, if you want to play from the ladies' tees, you can give me the $6 right now. And I'll play from wherever you want. Of course, Skip decided to play from the white tees because he's very competitive. So, folks, I want to get this golf season started with my buddy Skip. And I have to find him first. I have to get him to answer my phone calls and my text. So I'm going to keep you posted along the way. This is the summer of updates for $6 golf. I'm going to tell you how I play against Skip once I finally track him down, once he finally comes out of the witness protection program. He can't hide all summer. I know where he lives. So he can't hide all summer. One day I'm just going to show up at his door if I have to and tell him to give me the $6 to go away or we can go play golf. But I will keep you posted regardless. And Skip, I know you're out there. Skip, I know you're either watching or listening to this episode. And the reason that I know you're either watching or listening to this episode is because I am going to send it to you. So you're going to have no choice. Stop ducking me. Meet me on the golf course. I want my $6. I want my $6, Skip. Get off that wallet. Give me my money. All right. So there's that. Folks, I would be remiss if I didn't remind you at this point in the program to not forget to like, subscribe, tell anyone and everyone that you know about the joy of listening to and watching the Stomp the Tee podcast. Folks, we're here for you every single week, week in, week out. We do not take breaks. You know, I have zero problems facing you every single week. In fact, it's a joy for me. I really, really enjoy it. And I love hearing from you as well. So don't forget, tell your friends, tell your enemies, the Stomp the Tee podcast. This is for you, and we do it for you. So spread the word whenever you get a chance. Okay, so let's get into tonight's show. What is the most exciting play in all of sports? Folks, when I talk about this topic, when I say the most exciting play, I'm talking about game winners in any sport, right? I'm talking about game winners. And I will tell you this, and this is just my opinion. Is there any play in all of sports that's more exciting, more suspenseful, the most fun to watch than the buzzer beater in basketball? Folks, there is no wrong answer to this question. But for me, the answer is the buzzer beater is king. I'm telling you, think about it. You have walk-off home runs. You have Hail Marys. You have winning putts in golf on 18, chip-ins. You have the knockout in boxing. You have the photo finish in racing, both human and horses. Folks, to me, there is nothing, and I mean nothing, more exciting than watching a buzzer beater go through the net. Because it's not guaranteed. You don't know if it's going to go in or not. Now, I want you to think about this question from a certain context. I want you to forget about what gets the biggest reaction from the crowd who happens to be in the building or arena who are watching the event live. Forget about that. I'm literally asking you, as the viewer, what is the most exciting, most compelling type of play to watch? And for me, it is the buzzer beater. It's close. There are a couple things that are close. But to me, there's nothing that beats the buzzer beater in basketball. Think about it. There are so many memorable moments in sports of all kinds. I mean, the Kirk Gibson home run against the A's back in 88 with the Dodgers. Ray Allen's three against the Spurs. Joe Carter's home run against the Phillies to give Canada its first World Series championship. Mr. November Derek Jeter's homer against the Diamondbacks in a series that the Yankees eventually lost in 7 games, but I think they won game 4, I believe it was, because of Jeter's home run just after midnight in that game. Jordan, obviously, versus the Cavs. Christian Laettner, one of the most famous shots in the history of college basketball, versus Kentucky, to win that, I believe it was a regional semifinal or a regional final to get to the Final Four. There were so many moments in all of sports. I didn't throw in hockey. I didn't throw in tennis. There are so many, race car driving. There are so many memorable moments in all of sports. I want to hear yours. What are your most memorable game-winning end of the contest moments? I got to tell you, for me, the only thing that comes close, when I say the only thing that comes close, I don't mean the only thing that comes close. The game, meaning a walk-off homer comes very close to a buzzer beater. A Hail Mary comes very close to a buzzer beater. They're all close. But for me, the thing that comes the closest is the knockout in boxing. And for me, it cannot be like the one-punch knockout. It's got to be a combination. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 punches where you see the opponent start to tilt and finally go. Think Ali Foreman, Rumble in the Jungle. Think the eventual knockout of Mike Tyson by Buster Douglas. I mean, there are so many examples throughout the history of sports and boxing. But it is funny to me. The buzzer beater is incredibly hard to beat. Pound for pound, it's just a very, very exciting play. Now, I have not had the good fortune to witness any game-ending play in any sport live in the arena. Have you? I mean, I can imagine it is a thrilling experience. Now, I've witnessed some great moments, obviously, at many sporting events. But to actually see that game-winning buzzer beater, that game-winning walk-off, that game-winning helm, let's say you were in Landover, Maryland last year when the Washington quarterback, who's the kid out of LSU, Jaden Daniels, threw the Hail Mary that actually connected against the Bears. I mean, it's got to be an incredibly exciting moment. I've actually never been in an arena where there was a final play winning the game, to win the game. I have to cross that off my list at some point. I was at the Masters when Jordan Spieth won in 2015, and was going for a record, basically. But that's not quite the same thing. I will say this. The difference between a game-winning shot, let's keep it with basketball for now, but you can extend it to football, you can extend it to baseball, you can extend it to any sport. The difference between a game-winning play and a buzzer beater, a walk-off, is the difference between, let's keep it with basketball for now, it's the difference between Magic Johnson's junior sky hook that he hit against the Celtics. I believe that was in 85. Versus Kawhi Leonard's shot that bounced 4 times to beat the Sixers in 7 games in the Eastern Conference semifinals to decide who goes to the Eastern Conference finals a few years ago. The game-winning shot, Jordan hitting the shot against over Brian Russell, where he pushes off, of course, against Brian Russell, Utah. Versus Ray Allen's three-pointer against the Spurs. Malcolm Butler's interception of Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl versus, again, Jaden Daniels' Hail Mary against the Bears. The game-winning play is incredibly compelling. And it can be iconic. But the buzzer beater, the walk-off, that is much more dramatic in my view. Because literally, there's no time left. So, you know, there are some options there. I'm a big, big, big fan of this topic. Please let me know what you think. I really, really think it's very difficult to beat the buzzer beater in basketball. It just is, in my opinion. But if you disagree, you're not wrong. You just have a different opinion. Can't wait to hear about it. Moving on to our next topic. Can Rory McIlroy win, finally, the Masters this year? Folks, if Rory wins the Masters this year, he will complete the career Grand Slam. This would be the first major that he will have won in over a decade. Last major he won was 2014. I believe he won the Open Championship and the PGA Championship in 2014. Rory has had so many bites at the apple. It is unbelievable. It's weird. I mean, in some ways, you could kind of compare Rory to Phil Mickelson, but not with just one major. So many of Phil's close calls were with the U.S. Open. He didn't have a whole lot, to my mind, have a whole lot of close calls in the other majors. You know, the Open Championship, the Masters, he didn't have a lot of close calls. He didn't have a lot of close calls at the PGA. He either won it or he didn't. That's what's unique about Rory. Rory has had so many close calls and so many heartbreaks with the U.S. Open a couple times, with the Masters a few times. He's also, he's been close in the Open Championship as well. Rory, he's kind of a very odd player in the sense of, I always thought historically, even when Rory was in his prime, outside of driving the golf ball, which is, he was one of the best drivers in the world and still can be, just not as consistently as he was when he was younger. He was an unbelievable driver. But the thing about Rory's game to me was that you would watch him play a round of golf and wouldn't see necessarily anything spectacular. But then you look at the scorecard, he's like 4, 5, 6 under. And you're like, he just happened to be an incredible scorer in golf. I'm not saying that Rory never hit spectacular shots, but Rory scored better than he hit unbelievable shots and putts, outside of drives, of course. He would get close to the hole with his approaches, and he would put the ball in the hole. But I don't remember a ton of iconic Rory McIlroy shots. That's just me. I could be wrong about this. But I don't remember, like, chip-ins from unbelievable lies with Rory. I'm not saying he didn't do it. I just don't remember it. I just remember him always being an unbelievable scorer in golf that did one thing incredibly well, which is drive the golf ball, and everything else kind of took care of itself. Now, Rory, in my opinion, has never been a great putter. But if he putts decently, he's almost impossible to beat. And I think Rory is at the point right now. He's started 4 events this season, and he's won 2 of them. happen to be two iconic golf courses that he won on, TPC Sawgrass and Pebble Beach. I'm going to give you a couple stats, and I want you to listen to this. Rory has won, according to, I think, Golf Digest, he's won 43 times worldwide. Not all of those were official events, but he's won 43 times worldwide, 28 times on the PGA Tour. His putting this year, and this is what we're talking about with Rory, if he putts the ball, he's almost impossible to beat. His putting, he's averaging 27.81 putts per round, which is seventh on tour this year. His one putt percentage meaning once you get on the green, it only takes you one putt to get the ball in the hole. His one putt percentage is 47.22%. That is second this season on the PGA Tour. Folks, his scrambling. Rory has been, the stat scrambling means if you're out of position off the tee, let's say you hit it in the rough off the tee, or your second shot doesn't land on the green, so you're out of position, but you still make par or better. His scrambling percentage this season, in general, is 67.68%. That is 12th on the PGA Tour. Folks, I think this is Rory's year. I believe that he is actually going to win the Masters this year. And I will be the first one to admit, when Bryson DeChambeau won the U.S. Open last year, because Rory couldn't finish down the stretch, I really thought Rory would never win another major again. But it just goes to show you, and he hasn't won the Masters, so don't get me wrong. I'm not putting the cart in front of the horse. But if he does win the Masters, if Rory does win the Masters, it goes to show you that putting yourself in position time and time and time and time again can pay dividends eventually. And I think if Rory wins the Masters, he's going to run off at least one or two more majors during the course of his career. And I think it could set up a real battle for number one golfer in the world and an incredible rivalry between Rory and Scottie Scheffler, maybe Xander Schauffele, and some of the other golfers currently playing well. Ludvig Åberg, who knows? Ludvig has to win a major first. But I think if Rory can win the Masters in a couple weeks, he is going to be a handful for the next 3 or 4, 5 years. I really, really like his chances. All right, folks. This is the point in the show where I get to ask you a question. And that question is, what are you drinking tonight? Well, I can tell you what I'm drinking. And the answer is Arrowwood Farm Single Barrel Bourbon. Folks, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this product, and then I will give you my thoughts on it. Arrowwood Single Barrel Bourbon is bottled and distilled by Arrowwood Farm Distillery. This is located, I believe, in the Hudson Valley of New York. It's in a town or hamlet called Accord, New York. A-C-C-O-R-D. Accord, New York. This is 45% ABV, which makes it 90 proof, which is essentially much lower than I normally drink, but, you know, I have range. This particular bottle was from Barrel 71 And this bottle was number 234 out of 258 bottled from a particular cask, that barrel, barrel number 71. This Arrowwood is on the young side. It is, they say, at least 3 years old. But whenever they say at least, take whatever number follows as the actual age statement. So this is 3 years old. And I can't give you a number. I can't tell you what it costs because my wife bought this when she was in Connecticut and brought it back here for me to drink, try, taste the whole nine. So I don't know how much it cost. But that being said, it is a very crafty, in the air quote vernacular, the crafty bourbon. These particular distillers, they make a gin, a vodka, and a bourbon. The bourbon uses all local New York State product. It is, and they use the spring water from their farm. I can read the label. It said, made with locally grown Wapsie. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but Wapsie, it's W-A-P-S-I-E. Wapsie Valley heirloom corn, rye, and barley. So, how is it? As I said, it's very crafty, very savory. It's interesting. The lower proof really kind of helps. I don't want to say nullify, because that's not true. But the lower proof definitely helps. Let me just say it. I don't think it's a very interesting bourbon. I mean, is it drinkable? Absolutely, yes. I mean, I think you would be hard-pressed if you like higher proof whiskeys to find a lower proof whiskey undrinkable. But it's not overly interesting to me. It's savory. It's muted on the flavor profile. It doesn't hurt you, but I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't buy it again. I wouldn't buy it after this bottle. Is there anything wrong with it? No, absolutely not. It just doesn't seem overly complex to me, flavor-wise. Now, I'm sure they do some interesting things at their distillery. Who knows? But I got to tell you, I am underwhelmed by the product in the actual bottle. And, you know, this is just me, but look at the spelling of Arrowwood, guys. A-R-R-O-W-O-O-D. So it's either arrow, wood, it's one word, or Arrowwood. I mean, who knows? I mean, you couldn't add an extra W in there to make it Arrowwood. Who knows? It's just me. That's fine. I'm not telling anybody how to name their product. Anyway, all that being said, does it hurt you? No. Is Arrowwood a staple? Is it going to be a regular addition to my bar? No. But, folks, you don't know it unless you try it. And this is what we do here with What Are You Drinking Tonight? We try things so that you can or cannot try them yourselves. And I'm going to give you my honest opinion each and every single week. Arrowwood Farm Distillery Single Barrel Bourbon, it's okay. But I wouldn't go out and buy it. I'm not even sure what the price is on this, but I know it's probably more than $35. That much I do know. It's a guess. I don't know that, but it's a guess. Anyway, that is the show for tonight. Folks, I want to thank you again for watching. I want to thank you again for listening. We are here for you each and every single week. I want you all to enjoy March Madness. Masters is coming up in a couple weeks, so that'll be fun. But enjoy March Madness. I think we're going to try to get back out on the golf course next week. Got a couple things to do around the house this week, so I can't sneak away. But definitely enjoy the tournament, men's and women's. Let's go Gamecocks. Rooting for Dawn Staley to bring another championship to South Carolina and represent Philadelphia very well. I'm sure she'll be just fine. So, for now, that is it. My name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tea podcast. We thank you, as always, for watching and listening. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.